every neighborhood has a story. And every person from the neighborhood has a different outlook on said stories.
The neighborhood is on a cusp of, are we going to get worse? Are we going to get better?
It can't go but one way, and that's up, because it's hit the rock bottom over the past, 20 years or so.
From WYPR
and PRX,
it's a special edition of Out of the Blocks.
The Morningside.
On Detroit's east side.
It's one neighborhood, everybody's story.
The story of regular people who go about the business of work and family, and they anchor Detroit, and they just quietly do it in their own honorable way.
From the minds of Aaron Hinken
and Wendell Patrick,
in collaboration with the Morningside 48224 podcast from Michigan Public Radio,
it's Out of the Blocks, Morningside,
Detroit, Michigan,
right after this.
If you love hearing people tell their own stories, you're going to love Common Space. Common Space is a podcast that goes deeper, connecting people through live storytelling and conversation. Season 2 is rolling out right now. You're going to hear stories grouped on all kinds of themes, including death and dying, motherhood, incarceration, class, and more. These are stories told by real people in front of a live audience. Brought to you by WHYY, producers of Fresh Air with Terry Gross and First Person Arts in Philadelphia. Search for Common Space wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to acommonspace.org. Support for Out of the Blocks comes from Safe Streets of Sandtown Winchester, an evidence-based violence prevention and interruption program that works to reduce shootings and homicides and is sponsored by Catholic Charities in collaboration with the Baltimore City Department of Health. Last year, Catholic Charities Safe Streets conducted 543 mediations in Sandtown Winchester to successfully thwart gun violence. Learn more at cc-md.org/safestreets.
Even before you even walk in through the double doors, you hear the music blasting, so that gets you pumping right away, where you just want to come in and put your skates on, and you be like, okay, let me hurry up, get my skates on so I can get on the floor and do what I do. I am Mary. Everyone calls me Miss Mary. We are at Royal Skateland, 5201 Arthur Road and Warren. Skateland is a place where you can go and you can just enjoy yourself, enjoy your families without the parents being behind you. Somewhere where you drop your kids off early in the morning, as early as the rink open to late at night to when it closed. That's how most of us spent our teenage years. We didn't go home until they closed, and we was here before the doors even opened.
My name is TJ Williams. I'm 14. I come here every day.
My name is Alexis. I'm 13. Skateland's awesome. I come here like every Tuesday,
Skateland, I've been going here for forever.
And we're going to show our move.
It's the neighborhood Skateland.
Look, and we're going to show our move.
Well, I'm Darian. My job is skate counter. Pass out the skates.
I see you repairing people's skates. They're coming over here, putting their feet up on the counter. You're tightening them up while they don't even have to take their skates off.
Yeah, like tell them to put their foot up here, and you can just fix it while they're standing up, and the skates will still be on their feet. I'm 17. I've been coming here since I could walk probably.
What do you like about working here?
Mostly the girls. All the girls know me from being up here skating and stuff. So it's easy for me to work here. I like it here.
You start them off young, and this is something that they would want to do. It keeps them out of trouble.
You are wearing roller skates right now as we're talking. You've got a nice pair of white skates with gold wheels on them. How long have you been skating here?
I've been skating here over 30 years. I've been working here for about 23 years.
And you get to do your job with roller skates on.
That's the fun part. That is the fun part about it. I can roller skate as much as I want.
You got the Pontiac, the half turn. You got the bob, the washing machine, slow backer skating, fast backer skate. It's a whole bunch of varieties.
I hear there's like a signature move here called the slide. Yeah. Who's going to tell me what the slide is and how that works?
The slide is basically you try to slide as far as you can from one point to another.
You get your speed up and then you turn sideways.
Yeah, and try to slide from one distance to another.
Skateland is known for. That is what Detroit is known for. Royal Skateland. We own the slide. you get on ride. And as we say, we side ride. You slide, ride, or die. We side ride.
I'm an old white man in a predominantly African American neighborhood, and at the very beginning wasn't well received. I understand it. So what I did to get to know my neighbors is I threw a beach party. We painted Mack Avenue blue, put 12 yards of sand down on the sidewalk, invited all the kids to come make sandcastles, had hot dogs, and just to get to know my neighbors. And that really worked out for me. They knew I was here with my family. They understood that, you know, I wasn't here to take any of the resources. I was here to contribute. Glenn Urquhart, I have the Detroit Artist Test Lab where we do multiple things out of here. We have a photo studio, studios for young artists. We also have an art space / event space.
Well, excuse the mess. This space right here is an event space, a gallery space. Eventually, this would be a cafe. We're building a gift shop over here. And then we have a bar that's going in over there. And I also have a bartending school that runs out of here. It works out perfectly with the event space over there. And we have offices, but we call them mini studios, that we membership out. We don't rent. We have memberships here. I know it's just a play on words, but I want people to feel like this is my home. Turns out that this is the best neighborhood I've ever been in. There's no place else I could do the things that I'm doing. When I met my wife and asked her where she wanted to live, she said no picket fences. So we bought this commercial building instead. And it's way too big for us. And so the business end of it actually bloomed out of there, out of necessity. And luckily, one of my first tenants, not really a tenant, one of my first members was JG.
Investing in this place was a no-brainer after I met Glenn. He told me his vision. It was, this area will be the artist corridor of Detroit. And it was just like, I'm down. Like, I'm down. Say no more. I'm John J.G. Galloway. We're in the Detroit Artist Test Lab inside Audio Wave Studio. The best way to picture it is closing your eyes. So you come into the door, you have like white couches, white chairs, you have soundproofing all along the wall, spotlighting to make the light control a little bit better because you want to make it more conversational and just not so doctor office-ish. That's a word. We're located on the east side, a place where I was born and raised. I actually started podcasting because I got sick. I had cancer at one point, and a buddy of mine was visiting my house, and he was like, you know, I was listening to a podcast, and we both have that conversational style where it's like, people will love to hear this. So, we kind of just said, like, let's do it. Like, let's start a podcast.
I'm JG, man. Welcome to NWP Podcast.
I'm Mr. Terrific. I'm back.
My podcast is called NWP.
Hello, everyone. Happy Thirsty Thursday. I am Ann After Five.
I have a show called Bar Babes.
Right here from studios of AudioWaveNetwork.com.
I have a show called Academy Sports Show.
And we're back for another episode of Dear Showrunners. I'm your girl, Joe.
I'm Ann.
I have a show called Dear Showrunners. They talk about the writing aspect of various TV shows. So they dissect TV, but from a writing standpoint.
Hashtag mother Eastside is in the building.
Ow.
What up, what up? What's the deal? What's the deal?
I always wanted like a podcast deal. Like I always looked at podcasts like music artists look at record label deals. It's like I get signed, I get all this money, you know, I do all these things, but the wave of independency is on right now. So I said, let me take it into my own hands. Let me create my own. And that's what birthed Audio Wave. It's like I had a knack for like obtaining sponsorships. And I can take the knowledge I know of getting sponsorships and give it to aspiring podcasters. And that's what I did.
Jonathan at that point had a regular job, and since then he's built this inside of my art studio, and it's incredible. And now he's quit his job and this is what he does. This is his deal.
I'm so new to business. Like, I'm a creator. So business meetings, business conversations, it's like, these are the parts where I'm scared. I'm kind of nervous, not scared, but nervous in. But like, a mic in front of me, it's game time.
His little world is in this booth, for lack of a better term, but he's affected the whole place. It's the largest African-American owned podcast network in North America.
That's what it is. Until someone proves otherwise, that's what we're going with, you know. Make sure you follow Audio Wave Network, and just all the creatives out there, create until it's not fun anymore and be great. That's it.
You have such a peaceful house, and I really like the sound of your wind chimes out there on this windy day.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the little artist in me. You know, there's an artistic side to myself, so... I'm Gloria Thomas, and we are sitting here in my home at 4127 Corville Street in Detroit, Michigan. I just relocated from North Carolina, and I was looking for to buy a home. And at that time, I was single, and I was looking at different areas. And so I just said, I kind of like that house, and the neighborhood looked fairly stable. And so I said, okay. Let's do it.
You say when you moved to Morningside, you were single. That changed after you moved here.
Yeah, it did. I met my husband like soon after I got the house. I met my husband. So I wasn't a spring chicken when I got married. But it was good. God knows when doors need to open for you. I'm in my 60s now.
Were you looking for love at the time? Was this a surprise to you?
No, total surprise. I was definitely not looking. Definitely. So it came out of nowhere.
Tell me about your wedding day.
Oh, wow. That was like unreal. I was a good day. My family came from out of town, and we just had a family celebration. We hadn't had a marriage in a family in a little while, so it was a very good thing. So it was good.
Probably made you feel like a young woman. I see a big smile on your face as you remember this.
Yeah, it did.
Tell me his name.
His name is James Thomas.
He was obviously charmed by you. What charmed you about him?
My husband is about 6 feet tall and was just like a teddy bear in a way. So that charmed me. I loved his laugh. I loved his laugh. He had a big, big laugh. And he had a big heart. You know, he had a big heart. So,
how much time did you guys have together before he passed?
Oh, 8 years. 8 years. So,
how long ago did he pass away?
Oh, last month. Last month. He went into the hospital because his blood pressure had spiked. And there was a tear in one of his arteries leading out of the heart. And that evening they called me, he had an aneurysm. And by the time I got there, you know, of course, when you get to the hospital, you just, you know, you're running into the hospital, you're running down the hallway. And as soon as I got into the ICU, I looked at his nurse had tears in his eyes. And the door was closed. And I just went in and he was gone and I just sat there with him. You know, there's something, I was looking at a documentary that elephants do, there's a caressing that you do. I did the same thing as a human, I don't know, it's, we do that even though he was gone. It's just that I just sat there and caressed him and talked to him, yeah. I just said how much I loved him and I told him it's okay, it's all right. All your daughters are here and the grandchildren are here and we love you.
You must be going through sort of a radical reorganizing of your life in your mind right now, huh?
Yeah, it's in life, blessings and burdens come together. They do not come separately. I just know that everything happens for a reason.
What do they say? It's better to have lost a love than never to have loved at all.
Yeah.
Is that, do you believe that's true?
Oh, it is true. It is true. In life, there will be sadness and bitterness and feast and famine and joy and sorrow. And all of these things are experiences that help to provoke us to be better people, sometimes to see more what our calling is or what our passion is. Sometimes we discover these things in sorrow and in very difficult situations.
It's Out of the Blocks, Morningside.
Detroit, Michigan.
One neighborhood.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Support for Out of the Blocks comes from the Maryland Institute College of Art, MICA, founded in 1826 as the Maryland Institute for the Promotion of the Mechanic Arts, is one of the oldest art colleges in the United States. MICA is located at 1300 West Mount Royal Avenue in Baltimore. More at mica.edu.
I've always had a motto when I was in public service. If you don't want to know the truth, don't ask me, because I'm going to tell it. My name is Artina Tinsley Hardman, and we are here at Mac Alive Community Resource Center, located at 3746 Fisher Street in Detroit, Michigan. This was a building that had actually been slated for demolition. So everything in the graveyard is not dead.
Wow, this is a really great, this is a bona fide classroom. You've got desks, you've got computers. You're a full-fledged educational facility here.
We try hard. The residents utilize the computers. They help do resumes, help to do job search. This is also where we have our Harris Literacy Program to increase the knowledge of the people outside of our doors. I like to tell people we do a lot with the little. We're not the agencies that get the big. We don't get the $1 million, not even $100,000. But what we do get, we make it work and we make it happen. The building was actually vandalized and dilapidated, used for a shooting gallery. A lot of drugs went in and out of this building for many years. Drugs definitely played a big role in this entire community and the city of Detroit in terms of its decline. Now, one thing I like to remind people is that blacks don't own any planes and we don't own any big boats to get it here. So it had to come in some kind of way. And unfortunately, it hit us and it hit us hard with the 80s and the introduction of the crack cocaine. The problem is that grandparents now are the drug addicts. You know, there was a safety net where years ago, the grandparents could keep the kids if something was happening. But now, the same grandparents is on drugs. So who's going to keep the kids? It's just the kids keeping themselves. I think one of my saddest things is that the kids have to look at all this blight. Kids have to be in an environment that includes the school, that includes being able to eat, you know, having heat, running water, those things that we take for granted in this community, it can be challenging for some families. You have work, you have families now who don't have running water. In America, you know, in the land of the free, home of the brave, people don't have running water. It's a crime. It's a crime. But we have to understand that so much of what we want to see happening, we have to come together. Black people have had a history of, unfortunately, not being able to work together like we should. You know, it's this crab in the barrel syndrome. You know, and the reality is we have to learn. I think we are learning that as we collaborate these organizations together, that something's going to happen. There's going to be change. But change doesn't just happen. People make it happen. And I'm going to make mine happen.
I'm Gary Gray. This is my wife, Sharon, and my oldest daughter, Lauren.
How long have you lived in the neighborhood?
30 years. Lauren was 6 months old when we moved in this house.
My name is Lauren Gray.
And who's this over here in the baby holder?
This is my baby. This is Ikaya. He is 5 weeks old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I actually just moved back here in December around Christmas time. So, you know, none of the old familiar faces are here. It felt like starting over. My childhood, I remember being nice on this block. I could play outside all day with my friends, and I remember having block parties.
This block probably was, in terms of racial composition, when we moved in, 50-50 white and black. It didn't take long before that changed, so that happened way before 2008. In come more renters, people who are less conscientious, and a few people lost their properties, but you never saw anything boarded up. Come 2008, they began to board up homes. Some homes were demolished. People who were solidly middle income, maybe husband and wife working, one or both of them lost their jobs. This neighborhood was also hard hit by predatory lending. And this happened all over the country. But when people who live from paycheck to paycheck get hit, they lose their homes.
We have you know, several homes that are boarded, not as bad as some blocks that I have seen, but then we have some homes where people take care of their homes too. And I have to give it to Gary with how well he takes care of our home, because he keeps the outside, you know, pretty well. So when you drive up to our house, it's like, oh, you could tell someone is taking care of this house. The neighbors, we know a few, but not like back in the day when we first moved over here. We pretty much knew everybody on the street. Gary was very active in the neighborhood, so he knew everybody by name.
I used to be the president of Morningside. We planted every tree on this block. We planted trees on the corner. We were, if they called, I was there. Lauren used to help. We had a neighborhood newsletter, and when we didn't have enough money to mail it, we would deliver it door to door. And Lauren, Lindsay, and landed in my jogging stroller, we go up and down the neighborhoods delivering the paper. So I was, you know, I tend to be all in when I'm committed. Now I don't have the time or the energy or the desire to be what I was at 38, trying to, you know, make the world better. So I just kind of take care of my little spot. And I mean, I don't want to sound too jaded, you know. I can still hang with the best of them in Morningside, but, you know, I don't know how much longer we'll be here, but we're here for now.
My name is Letitia Johnson. My relationship with Morningside is I am a resident adjacent in the adjacent community to Morningside. But 4 years ago, I started a nonprofit organization, Community Development Corporation, called MECCA. MECCA stands for Morningside, East English Village, and Cornerstone Community Advocates. Probably over a decade now, our community started to suffer from a number of foreclosures, a significant amount of blight. We've seen a transition from majority owner occupants to now majority renters. And we started to see aesthetically the community starting to decline. And so we have come in wanting to be a resident-led and resident-driven organization to revitalize our communities. I am one of eight children. I grew up in a pretty low-income household, but I grew up in a time where we had the village. We had family members that lived nearby. We had, you know, friends that were in the community, and we all stayed very close to one another. We all looked out for one another. So I grew up in, I'm going to say the 80s. How about that? So I grew up in the 80s, and unfortunately, I grew up during a time when a lot of our urban communities had substance abuse issues, and we experienced that in my household. But thankfully, I had four older siblings that helped to guide and direct me. And as a result, I am actually the first person amongst my siblings to get a college degree. So I see the current need for a lot of our residents to have that village around them that we don't currently have. And I think that's what I try to recreate in everything that I do within the volunteer work and even as I pursue elected office. As a matter of fact, I just came from downtown. I just filed to run for state representative here in District 2.
What does that journey entail in the immediate future?
It entails a lot of hard work. A lot of times it's difficult to determine where do you start. But I think the idea is to have our residents, to have the community identify where we start and make sure that we collectively come together to manage our own piece of the pie, right? Because we have these phenomenal community organizations, and as long as we're all collectively working towards the same goal, we're going to be successful.
My name is Derek Gray. We're in Morningside, in Detroit's East Side. I've been here for the last 10 years. Actually, I bought this house in 2006. I'm doing insurance sales right now. I got downsized from my employer a few months ago. And so fortunately, I took a test years ago and learned how to sell life insurance. Got, you know, licensed to be as another hustle, another sideline activity. So when I got downsized, I'm doing it full time now until something else comes along that I'm going to do, you know, hopefully down the road.
What do you do with yourself when you're not working?
Sports enthusiast. You know, you can't see on the podcast, but I'm 6'7", so I played sports throughout my life. And so I'm a very active. I was active. I ain't that active no more. I got a little pudge here, so that's kind of came with age. But very competitive, you know, very sports enthusiast. So, I, you know, football fanatic. My dad got me and hooked on football from age 7, you know, and to this day. I've been a season ticket holder for the Detroit Lions for 29 years now, which just takes a lot of pain and agony just to can say that, you know. But I love it. I'm a fanatic, so, you know, some of the things that I do. Write poetry. I do some things, you know, that a lot of people don't even know that I do, as far as that's concerned. I say I'm a closet poet.
Tell me more about your poetry. When did you get into that?
Oh, my whole life. I always, you know, something comes to my mind, I write it down, and then I may finish it off later. So I have a whole anthology of things that I've written over the years. One of my quests is to one day publish what I've written and, you know, see if the world can appreciate it.
Visions, sparked by sight, signaled by sound, subjected by smell, tested by taste, fueled by feel. Fervent images emerge from me, about me, without me. The possibilities are rarely doubt-free. From my view, I see things clearly. From your view, I see things cloudy. From our view, they see things monochromatically. From their view, we see things materially. From the worldview, no one sees the true reality. Across the landscape, life depicts scenes of similarity, clarity and contradiction, promise and prejudice, opportunity and oppression. For we only see what is presented to us through the magic of media and maelstrom. On a clear day, even Windex windows need cleaning.
What do you think the message of that poem is?
Well, the message is basically, everybody has their own vision of what things are, and we see things as we see things, and sometimes we don't take into consideration how other people see things. But in the reality, we're all in this one big world together, and we have to try to, you know, keep that in focus.
You've been listening to a special edition of Out of the Blocks,
produced by Aaron Hankin and Wendell Patrick,
in collaboration with Michigan Public Radio.
Special thanks to Imani Mixon of the Morningside 48224 podcast.
And WYPR's Katie Marquette. Aaron and Wendell want to thank all of us who took a leap of faith and shared our stories and our lives.
For WYPR and PRX,
this is Morningside signing off.
Signing off.
Signing off.
Signing off.
Hey guys, Aaron here with a special thanks at the end of this episode to the National Endowment for the Arts, the NEA, for supporting Out of the Blocks as we share our documentary model with cities across the country. And thank you for listening. Always great to have you along with us. And here's a kind of cool postscript for you. Derek Gray, the last guy you heard from on the episode, the poet. I asked him at one point in our conversation offhand if he'd ever written a poem about Detroit. He said,
"No, actually, I don't think I've ever written anything about Detroit. That's an interesting statement you made, because I lived it. It's my life is the poetry. I don't know if I've ever thought about it from the standpoint of writing about Detroit specifically.
Maybe a missed opportunity there.
Very well be. Maybe you piqued some curiosity. Maybe I need to do that.
Well, turns out Mr. Gray took me up on the suggestion. About a week after our visit, he sent me an email with a poem about Detroit. Imani went back to his house and recorded it for us, and we're happy to be able to share it here.
East side, west side, and all around D-Town. Detroit, Detroit, the Motor City. And believe you me, we can be nitty, gritty, and pretty. But have no pity on our souls, because we don't want it. We're proud, and we flaunt it like a badge of courage. We've taken blows, but we're not discouraged. Been down, but never out. And you better know it. Got scars, warts, and wrinkles, and we ain't afraid to show it. We're in the midst of another comeback, and this time, we won't blow it. You see, from the boundaries within our borders, we're 139 square miles of determination, perspiration, inspiration, and celebration. You see, we put the nation on wheels, and it feels great to know that not only did we make America rock, we make it roll. And if there's one thing I'll say, there will come a day when Detroit will stand erect, mend and correct all our missteps, step back into the conversation, show our best face to the nation, and once again be regarded as a municipal sensation."
Out of the Blocks is produced with grant funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from the Cohen Opportunity Fund, the William G. Baker Jr. Memorial Fund, Sig and Barbara Shapiro, Patricia and Mark Joseph, Jonathan Melnick, the Andy and Sana Brooks Family Foundation, the Hofberger Foundation, Associated Jewish Charities, the John J. Leidy Foundation, the Kenneth S. Batty Charitable Trust, and the MuseWeb Foundation.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.